Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Global Gaming Business Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jess Marquez, and our guests today are Susan Hensel and Joseph Grad, co-founders of Hensel Grad PC, to talk about the recent Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruling on skill games and the impacts it will have on the state's sizable gaming industry. The legal debate surrounding skill games has spread to multiple states in recent years, but Pennsylvania has become the premier battle zone, as tens of thousands of the machines now live in bars, clubs, and other small businesses, despite the calls from the casino industry and law enforcement to crack down. Last month, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court shattered the status quo by ruling that skill games are in fact illegal slots, which now sets the stage for the legislature to act. Gaming attorneys and former Pennsylvania regulators Susan Hensel and Joseph Grad have followed the issue from the beginning, and even they warn that there is much work ahead for all parties involved. Hensel, Grad, and I spoke remotely in July. Joe and Susan, thank you so much for joining me this morning. This is a very, very high-profile issue in the industry. There are a lot of ramifications of which we are going to go through today. It's such a big issue that I needed two lawyers to go through it rather than just one. That's how much manpower we needed for this one. But thank you guys so much. How are you doing today?
Very well.
And you?
Yeah. Good to see you.
Doing great. Thanks. I know, it's like every time there's a skill game update, then I know that I have to get Joe and Susan on. We should definitely do an episode in the future that has nothing to do with skill games, so that we can have a chance to talk about something else. But unfortunately, it's a big issue, or maybe fortunately for some, but it's a big issue right now, given the big Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruling that just came down earlier this month, of which we will talk about, and the ramifications. So I want to start first with a little bit of primer. So a little bit of background. So for anybody who may not be 100% aware, if you've heard the word skill games, especially in conjunction with Pennsylvania, it's a big issue in that state, but maybe you're not so much familiar with it. Susan, if you could give us kind of an introduction as to what is the issue at hand here? What are skill games like? What is the kind of the backdrop of this ruling as it comes in, specifically in regards to Pennsylvania?
Well, the games that we're talking about that were the subject of the Supreme Court's recent ruling, the state Supreme Court's recent ruling, are gaming devices that operate outside of a regulated casino or other environment, but they still afford the player a cash payout opportunity. So these games are available in Pennsylvania in bars and taverns, convenience stores, VFWs. And they're not just available in Pennsylvania. They are prevalent throughout the United States. They resemble slot machines, and they can have play that has spinning reels or other similar attributes of slot machines. But the games have a very significant difference. In addition to a first phase of a game like a slot machine, where a player sits down and they spin the reels and chance determines the outcome, these games have a second phase, and that second phase offers the players a pure skill game. Normally, the game is some kind of Simon Says, Follow Me type of game, and the games give the opportunity for the player to recoup the wager that they made, as well as a little bit of a gain, maybe like a 4% or some small percentage gain. So lower courts in Pennsylvania, prior to the Supreme Court decision, have used what is called the predominant factor test. And they have applied that test to the play of these games. And they have said, if a player has the opportunity to turn a loss into a win on every play using the second phase game, then skill predominates the game. And if skill predominates the game, it is not covered as an unlawful gambling device under the Pennsylvania Crimes Code. So that is how these games have been treated in Pennsylvania. They have been determined by lower courts to be skills games. They've been determined not to be covered by the Pennsylvania Crimes Code. And as a result, they have spread like wildfire throughout Pennsylvania. How many games are there? It's hard to say because they're not regulated. There are estimates that there could be 50 to 75,000 of them in operation in Pennsylvania. And to give you some context, there are currently approximately 25,000 casino slot games that are regulated in Pennsylvania. So this decision that changes the view that the lower court took, or overrules what the lower courts have said, is quite significant.
So that's interesting. There's a couple interesting things to kind of parse through there. And one of the things is that you talked about how it's not just Pennsylvania that you know this issue is prevalent. There's other states. Virginia is one, and then there's others as well. But for a lot of reasons, Pennsylvania has kind of become like the real kind of I don't know what the word it's escaping me, but kind of the premier example of this, and kind of the biggest legal battle to date with a lot of these issues that obviously we'll get into here in a second. But And you also mentioned too, just kind of the rise or the popularity of the machines, where they're dwarfing the number of regulated slot machines, and it has been for many years now. So like I said, this is not the only jurisdiction in America that is dealing with this, but definitely probably the premier one in terms of the importance of the ruling at hand. So if we move to now this Supreme Court ruling, Joe, if you could go through it a little bit, and specifically. You know, one thing I have to preface, obviously, anytime I talk about anything related to legal or politics or anything, I'm not an expert. And one thing that I have learned from gleaning from covering of legal cases in my time is that, you know, it all has to do with whatever specific questions are at hand, right? It's a very broad issue, or there might be multiple parts to it, but you know, the court is going to rule on very specific things or very specific interpretations, et cetera, et cetera. So in this ruling, kind of what was the specific legal issue at hand in this case, and kind of how did the justices rule here?
Really, the specific issue at hand was whether the PA Crimes Code and the PA Gaming Act should be interpreted as one unified document.
Okay.
Now, in the lower courts and the Commonwealth Court, the courts were looking at the Crimes Code as a distinct law and were supplying definitions to the undefined terms, such as gambling device or slot machine. And of critical note, in the PA Supreme Court case, the definition of slot machine was front and center. And that, unlike the Commonwealth Court, where they talked about slot machine and its typical ordinary usage, such as having a random number generator, having like larger payouts, having no involvement from the player, the Supreme Court rejected that and said, no, you have to look at these two laws as one unified document. And if slot machine is undefined in the Crimes Code, we are going to take the definition of slot machine in the PA Gaming Act and apply it to the Crimes Code. And why that is so important, and that's really the crux of the case, for your listeners. And the reason why is because the definition of slot machine in the PA Gaming Act does not distinguish between chance and skill. Machines that have, chance and skill are both within the definition of slot machine. So essentially, the Supreme Court eradicated that distinction that has been litigated in Pennsylvania for the last 13 years.
So one of my first reactions to this, and again, speaking as a total novice here, is that one of the things I find fascinating in a lot of these gambling cases, or just illegal cases in general, is like as it progresses up the court system, it could go one, it could be one-sided all the way up the court system, and then once it reaches the very top court, it could go all the way to the other end. And I can't help but feel like that's kind of what we saw here, right? In the sense that we had, there were multiple lower court rulings kind of in favor of skill games or, not in favor of the gaming industry, and then we get to the Supreme Court, and it seems to be this heavy pendulum swing back the other way. So I guess my question to you, Joe, would be, in your eyes, as somebody who's been, in the Pennsylvania gaming market for a long time, and obviously a legal expert, how do you interpret? Like, did you expect this type of ruling? Was it kind of surprising, and like this kind of a broad, move the other way? I mean, would you go so far as to say it was correct or not correct? I mean, what is your kind of analysis of how this ruling shakes out? Because, like I said, it seems to be a very big divergence from kind of what we had seen in up the court system.
Right. I'm a lawyer, as you stated, very familiar with Pennsylvania law. I'm also a lawyer, not interested in offending the justices of the PA
Sure.
Supreme Court either. Look, I mean, big picture, I think the court's reasoning, legal reasoning, is subject, open to criticism. Let's be fair. It's open to criticism. But for the most part, look, it's an academic question at this point. The Supreme Court has the final word. But when I look at it, I look at it more from a policy standpoint. At the time of the ruling, you had, as Susan mentioned, 50 to 75,000 unregulated, untaxed machines in the Commonwealth. The General Assembly was in a gridlock over the issue. You know, I think at some level, this was, at least in the back of their minds, you know, a way to advance the issue. And to, by incorporating the definition of slot machine, or by defining slot machine so broadly, they are essentially forcing the legislature back, you know, back into work and to resolve this. And you see it all over the opinion, even the, you know, 120-day stay. They realize that this is not an issue for the courts. This is an issue for the legislative branch.
It's interesting, you know, and me being, I'm curious, I would imagine in the legal world, there isn't, you probably aren't like shocked, or there isn't, you know, very like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm thinking of in the context, like, I'm a big sports fan, right? And when I see my favorite team make a trade, or if I see, you know, something happen in the sports world, I'm like, wow, that's shocking. I never expected it. I can't believe I'm floored, you know, like, was it kind of a similar reaction? You know, did somebody text you like, "Hey, did you see the Supreme Court ruling?" And now you guys are like, "Whoa!" Like, you know, it just was it kind of a big reaction in the legal
right.
world?
Well, I would say that I would not have been surprised by a legislative compromise before mm-hmm. a decision was rendered. Mm-hmm. But the fact that there was no legislative compromise, I would have been surprised if the PA Supreme Court upheld the Commonwealth Court decision. Because essentially it would allow the status quo to remain, and all of the skill game, you know, stakeholders would have zero motivation to negotiate. So in a way, it was about high level. I think it was about resetting the table.
Well, speaking of, if we pivot back to Susan here, so let's go through some of these. So now, obviously, we just went through the ruling is final. It was handed down. So where do we go from here? What are some of the immediate effects? Obviously, as Joe noted, there's a 120-day kind of window here, stay before anything happens. But, like, where do we go from here, essentially?
Well, up until now, based on those lower court rulings, these games have been operating in a gray zone. We had no laws that specifically said you couldn't have them, but we had no laws authorizing them. We just had these lower court rulings that said that they were not illegal. So the Supreme Court decision has changed that. We now have no uncertainty. We know that these games are illegal slot machines in Pennsylvania. As Joe mentioned, the court did put in place a 120-day stay, and we anticipate that 120 days will be used by the state legislature to consider and adopt legislation that will both regulate and tax these machines. Skill game regulation has been long discussed in Pennsylvania, but as Joe alluded to, there's just been no incentive to this point for the skill game industry stakeholders to come to the table and advocate for a particular or agree to a particular form of legislation. And why would they? They were operating in an unregulated environment. They were not paying any additional gaming tax. You know, these were very much the gravy days for the skill game industry. That dynamic has changed, and there will now be incentive for the skill game industry to get behind and look for favorable regulation. At the same time, we have a casino industry in Pennsylvania that's invested a great deal of money in gambling and in infrastructure here, and they have long been opposed to this industry. So we anticipate that in the negotiations that take place within the legislature, there will be some horse trading to give some kind of compromise to the casinos, as well as put in place some form of regulation for the skill game industry. There are very few parts of Pennsylvania that don't have these games in them. And so we anticipate that right now, state representatives are receiving calls from establishments that are in their districts saying, well, what can you do to keep the money flowing? You know, in a lot of cases, these businesses have really come to rely on the revenue stream from these games for profitability and in some cases survival. So we expect that we will see something within those 120 days. It's our understanding conversations are already taking place in the state Senate. Our governor has long advocated for a law that regulates and taxes the games and has actually included revenue in the budget proposals. So we do expect at the end of the day that we will see something come out of the state legislature. In the meantime, the establishments and others, stakeholders in the industry, you know, are just concerned and taking a wait and see approach to what comes out.
And so it seems as though, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems as though out of all the potential avenues or all the options that, you know, however this may shake out, that the seizure of the machines or kind of just the doing away with them altogether just does not seem to be possible and or, you know, kind of on the table. Like, could that technically happen? Like, in other words, like if they were to do nothing and the window expires, then technically then those machines would be illegal and they would just all need to be seized, right? But that does not seem to be kind of an option at this point, given their proliferation and kind of the resources that would take.
Well, come mid-October, the decision came out June 15th. If by mid-October the legislature doesn't act, then that's exactly what will happen. These games will have to be removed, and if they're not removed, then the various players are going to be subject to enforcement action.
They're going to be the U-Haul. There are going to be a lot of U-Hauls, a lot of box trucks being used in Pennsylvania. So, yeah. So moving back to Joe now. So, are there any potentially kind of maybe unintended consequences from the ruling that the, you know, the legislature might need to address here in the immediate future?
Yeah, we certainly think so, because the approach that the Supreme Court used was more akin in essentially wiping out the skill machines. Their approach was more, you know, using a sledgehammer instead of a scalpel.
Sure.
by using the PA Gaming Act of slot machine, which is incredibly broad. And when you read it, essentially any machine that takes some level of that accepts consideration and is capable of being played is now a slot machine. So, yeah, skill machines certainly fall within that definition. So is a jukebox, a pool table, an arcade game. Really any amusement device in the Commonwealth is now really under the criminal prohibitions of the crime code, of the crimes code. So I think that certainly has to be addressed, I think, by the legislature, and certainly those stakeholders will certainly be involved, I would think.
So that's more, you know, kind of more language being parsed out, more definitions kind of breaking down, or like how exactly would you describe, like what kind of steps would that entail? Like just more language, more kind of statutory stuff? Like what do you have in mind?
Yeah, the General Assembly has to actually define what machines are amusement devices that are capable of being played, you know, operated and played and distributed in the Commonwealth that are not subject to gaming regulation, and which machines are actually, you know, kind of gaming-like machines or slot machines that need to be regulated by the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board. So essentially what the Supreme Court did was essentially just carpet bombed the entire area. And now the legislature has to kind of put it back together. And hopefully they'll put it back together in some fashion that makes sense.
Well, it's interesting. I did not think got on today, I did not think we would be talking about carpet bombing and sledgehammers and scalpels. But this is real. You know, like I said, this is real seismic stuff going on. So, Susan, speaking of the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board, obviously both of you, worked there for many years. You're both very familiar with kind of how that agency operates. Should the if a law is enacted to regulate and these machines, and the PGCB is ostensibly put in charge of that, or that falls under its remit, what's your kind of knee-jerk reaction to that, and kind of what is your how do you envision that kind of playing out?
Well, given that the Supreme Court applied the definition of slot machines in the Gaming Act, and the Gaming Control Board is responsible for implementing and oversight under the Gaming Act, we would anticipate that the responsibility would go to the PGCB, and that is appropriate. They regulate commercial gaming in the Commonwealth, and they have the expertise. They've been through many gambling expansions, and I had the pleasure of being a part of those. And so I think it does make sense that the Gaming Control Board would be given oversight responsibility. I can say, from having sat in the middle of gaming expansions as the director of licensing, that I would not anticipate that the agency would start from scratch in crafting regulations should this be handed to them. They will look to other verticals that they have in place and borrow from those regulations to cobble together tailored skill game regulations. And I think a good starting point for them will be the regulations for the oversight of the video gaming terminal businesses that operate in truck stops in Pennsylvania. What will regulation look like? I think we can anticipate that there will be a licensing structure that will look at game manufacturers, the operators, the establishments, and the others who own, control, and benefit, even individuals from the industry. I think we'll see ongoing compliance and reporting requirements, and we will certainly see enforcement provisions. And there will now be, for the first time, technical standards that will be applied to these games so that fairness and payouts and problem gambling considerations will need to be taken into account. And of course, as we talked about, there will be taxation, and that will fall to the Department of Revenue. So I think that we're going to see pressure on the Gaming Control Board to stand this vertical up quickly. There's been pressure every time there's been another gaming expansion in Pennsylvania, and we have a lot of businesses that are dependent on the revenue flow from these machines, so that would not be surprising. And in light of that, we would not be surprised to see a transition period where the various stakeholders are allowed to come into compliance, maybe through self-reporting or through some other criteria, in order to keep the money flowing, keep the businesses operating, while the Gaming Control Board stands up its full regulatory scheme.
Well, that sounds like a lot of work, and I have two follow-ups for you, kind of trying to parse through this. My first is that I'm most familiar, from a regulatory standpoint, I'm most familiar with Nevada, and I know from, you know, just from dealing with them that, you know, they have kind of like their non-restricted licenses and their restricted licenses, and, you know, you have a lot of, like, gas stations and kind of smaller businesses, they can get a restricted license for however many machines it is, like 6 machines or something like that. I would imagine it probably be maybe something similar in this case for like all these small businesses that would like to offer like a small number of machines, maybe like less than 10 or something like that.
I would expect that there will be some limits on how many can be in each establishment, what kind of establishments can have these. There are going to be a lot of details. This is a large expansion of gaming. You know, we have a lot of bars and taverns in the Commonwealth. This is all up to the legislature to decide who's in, who's out, what they are authorized to do, what exactly does a slot machine in a one of these environments look like. As Joe said, you know, there could be some refining of definitions and in the amusement and the slot definitions. So, yep, there's a lot of work ahead, and you know, there's going to be there are a lot of unanswered questions at this point.
I had one more for you. One of the things that's interesting to me in the wake of this ruling, right, is the idea of fighting against something or, you know, challenging something in court and then being forced to now reconcile or now work with them. You know, in this case, you know, what I'm thinking of is the skill game manufacturers, right, in the sense that these are companies that have come up against a lot of legal scrutiny in Pennsylvania. The regulators prosecutors in Pennsylvania do not like. I'm thinking of specifically a Pace-O-Matic. They're the biggest kind of company. I believe they're based in Georgia, if I'm not mistaken, something like that, somewhere in the South. But, you know, now that they will be kind of taken into the fold and now they will become ostensibly a regulated entity under the state, licensed entity, are you aware, does Pennsylvania have requirements for, like, for companies to, you know, invest in or, like, to have a presence in the state? You know what I'm saying? Like, if Pace-O-Matic comes to a licensing hearing and they say, we want you to have some kind of a foothold or some kind of investment in Pennsylvania, does Pennsylvania have any requirement like that you're aware of?
Well, the legislature can put in place whatever the legislature puts in place. There have been requirements in the past for suppliers to have a presence in the U.S., or not in the U.S., in Pennsylvania, in the casino gaming context. What this looks like and what the requirements are that are imposed on manufacturers or operators, you know, is really anyone's guess at this point.
Anyone's guess, that's for sure. That we know for sure. We can say that for sure. So moving to Joe, from a game standpoint, you know, now that we are operating under this new, you know, this new reality and kind of moving forward with it, you know, what kind of games might be offered, do you think? Or what kind of, you know, from a product standpoint, kind of what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting question. I think, you know, under the old regime, you know, I think the skill machines, you know, had to be designed, you know, and manufactured, you know, with constraints, you know, in accordance with the case law, in accordance with the idea that, you know, they were at an establishment, that was looking for, you know, somewhat of a guaranteed payment. So you had machines that weren't taking in that much money in terms of denomination. They weren't paying out that much. There weren't, like, I'm not aware of any jackpots or progressive jackpots. So they really weren't slot machines in that sense. But now that they are slot machines, will that give, you know, the establishments more leeway in terms of what machines can go in, can go on the premises? So, yeah, I think it's a very interesting question. I'm sure the casino lobby will definitely have a lot to say on this issue, as so will establishments. So I think it's a really interesting question. I think my sense will be that there will be fewer machines in the Commonwealth, but that they will probably be more sophisticated and, you know, probably resemble the machines like you'd find in a casino relative to the machines that you've seen in the Commonwealth over the past 10 years in bars.
Well, if I've learned anything about, you know, again, working in this industry and covering suppliers and products, like, once the stage is set, or once the runway is cleared, then the products, you know, come afterward, and they look just, they look exactly like slot machines in a lot of cases, whether the back end, you know, the multiple different kinds of back end machinery behind them, they always seem to find a way to make the gameplay extremely similar. So I would imagine if, you know, years down the line as we move forward, that would most likely be the case. So thank you guys so much for joining me. This has been really great. I want to get you out of here, obviously, on this. As our, if our listeners could not tell by now, you two are both experts at this and both, you know, have a lot to offer. So what assistance can HenselGrad be to manufacturers, operators, providers, anyone?
We are here and available to speak with anyone in the skill game ecosystem. We know we don't have a law yet, but as former regulators, Joe and I are well-versed in what future regulation could look like, and we are here to assist with companies getting through whatever kind of licensing process and compliance process is put in place. We understand that there can be fear, intimidation, and concerns about being regulated and being brought under the oversight of a new agency. And we are here to help take the fear and concerns out of that process and to make it as easy and pain-free as possible.
No, I agree with everything Susan said. I think that if you're in this ecosystem, I would certainly start the process of preparing for gaming licensure. It's going to be something that they haven't experienced before, and it makes sense to resolve any potential issues prior to the enactment of the law and not after, while they're trying to apply. So I think, to the extent they can get out in front of it and understand the requirements, I think everyone's going to be better off.
Certainly. Well, as we've alluded to many times over the course of this interview, we are in early stages. We don't know how this ultimately will shake out, but we know for sure that big changes are coming and that it will be momentous for Pennsylvania gaming. Susan, Joe, thank you so much again for joining me today, and hope you have a great day.
Okay, thanks, Jess.
Nice to see you.
Take care.
We thank you for joining us on this episode of the Global Gaming Business Podcast. To learn more about Susan, Joe, HenselGrad, and all things gaming, visit ggbmagazine.com. Don't miss an episode of the GGB Podcast by subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks. We'll see you next time.